Good morning. Before I begin, I want to just take this moment of personal privilege. This is Bishop Shannon's first clergy conference as our diocesan. At the beginning of the conference, we saw the entire staff introduced, and I hope that you appreciate and have seen the joy and the unity of that staff. And there's a reason for that, and it is the tone that has been set by our new diocesan, and it is the seamless transition that we've experienced in the Diocese of Virginia with this new beginning. So I want to just take this personal opportunity to salute you, sir, and to say thank you, because you're at the heart of the transition, and we're with you. Thank you. I've been asked to speak this morning on the subject of strengthening congregations through a ministry of encouragement. My remarks this morning are based on these assumptions. The first assumption is that faithfulness to God's mission, what God has called us to do, is foundational, is central to the life of the church. We need to focus on mission to get the first things first. And my second assumption is that mission is founded both on the Great Commission and on the Great Commandment. We're called to make disciples, and at the same time, we're called to love our neighbor. I've heard so many conversations over the years of, should we focus on inreach or outreach? Should we focus on mission, or should we focus on caring for those within our body? And it is my sense that it is always both and. We have been sent. We have been sent into the world, a world profoundly loved by God. And we are sent bearing good news, and we are sent to care in the name of Christ. Now, from my perspective, the question of whether the church is called to grow is not up for debate. It is our calling from God. So when I'm thinking of strengthening a congregation, I'm also thinking of growth. And not necessarily numerical growth, but growth among the members. We strengthen the congregation when we focus on the basics. Now, my observations are personal, and they're open to challenge. But based upon what I have experienced, what I've seen, and what I've heard, I will first suggest five essentials for strengthening a congregation. They are education, prayer, evangelism, stewardship, and service. And then I will turn my attention to the matter of tactics, of strategies for strengthening and growing our congregations. But let's begin with the basics. First, we strengthen our congregations through constant, effective teaching of all of our members. We cannot assume that a Sunday school education is sufficient for living the Christian life as an adult. Lifelong formation is essential, especially if we are to continue to grow in our adult years. Now, as I've visited a number of congregations in the diocese, I've heard too many times people say to me that in this particular congregation, there is no apparent interest in adult education, or they're simply not interested in matters of formation. Now, while I might accept that statement as being true, I don't for a minute think that it excuses us from our role as teachers. So what should one do if one finds oneself in a congregation where there is no apparent interest in adult education or adult formation? I would ask another question then, if there appears to be little interest? I might ask, who is paying attention to my preaching? I might ask. And there might be one or two or three or four who really get it. I'm serious. Or to ask the question, what one person or two or three or four people are ready and serious to grow in their faith? Or more particularly, I would ask the question, who are my disciples? What three or four people would benefit from concentrated teaching and encouragement, where there is no apparent interest in education or formation? I would encourage a leader to intentionally reach out and teach and encourage the few, even the one who is interested. One person may need to start from the beginning in learning the basics of Christianity. Another may benefit from a disciplined program of study like DOC or EFM or Kerygma. The formation of that one person will be a treasure for that congregation for years after that leader may have departed. When a congregation sees that a leader is serious about adult formation, others will eventually respond. The priority on formation, however, needs to come from the leader. He or she needs to demonstrate that it is vital. If a congregation is to be strengthened, the members need to be growing. And members will not grow by themselves. They'll just grow older. They will grow if they're taught basic disciplines. Second, we strengthen our congregations when we teach members to pray. I mean taking a person by the hand and say, let's pray, or inviting one to pray. We cannot assume that our members have been taught to pray, but we can expect our leaders to be people of prayer. And I believe it's through active participation in groups that pray that adults can learn to pray. It's wonderful when an adult can come to the point where he or she can come to a prayer group and say, I need your prayers today. I'm worried about my job. I think my wife may have cancer. That we need to learn to pray for one another. As uncomfortable as it may be at first, we need to nudge people to pray out loud. And that can most easily happen in small groups. Some of you have been to my office at Goodman House, and if you've been there, I've probably asked you to open our meeting with prayer. And I do that very intentionally, where I assume when I enter into a pastoral conversation in my study that the person coming into that conversation is a person of prayer. And I appreciate the prayers that have been offered for me. Once in a while, I will close a meeting in prayer, or if I've opened a meeting, I'll ask the other to pray. And I would encourage clergy to do that, lay leaders to do that as well. Third, we strengthen our congregations when we encourage a personal commitment to Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord. That can so easily be neglected, where we just assume that that person made a commitment yesterday or made a commitment at confirmation, or that that business has been tended to already. From my perspective, it is very important for us to know our people well enough to get to the point in a relationship where we can ask that question. Now, it's not the first question. It's not the question that I would be screaming from the corner, have you been saved? But it is a very tender question that when one is entering into a trusting relationship with one's pastor, it's a question that ultimately needs to be asked. And it is a question that teachers and lay leaders can ask as well. Every congregation, large or small, needs to provide avenues where people can make a commitment to Christ. We cannot assume the people in our pews know the Master. Evangelism, personal evangelism, is then an integral part of our mission. Now, while I appreciate the formal process of confirmation, reception, and reaffirmation, I know the service by heart. The personal commitment to Jesus Christ needs to be made long before the bishop shows up on Sunday morning. And I can't think of a more effective way of helping a person make that commitment than to listen intently to the sharing of one's faith story, especially in a small group of trusted friends. For I've noticed that as people tell their story, the story continues to develop. And when one is able to talk about his or her faith in a personal way with trusted friends, that can actually lead one to a deeper commitment to Christ. So I encourage every person to have the opportunity of faith formation. I've noted on vestry retreats, and this is departing from my text, but I've noted when I've spent time on vestry retreats as a parish priest, where people have actually been able to share their own faith story, that trust has been developed on a vestry, and that over the course of a year, when people have focused more on faith formation in the earliest months of a vestry experience, that more actually gets accomplished in the 12 months of a vestry year. And I've also noticed that when I've worked people too hard on a vestry retreat and not tended to matters of faith and simply focused on goals, we've reached a lot of goals, but by October and November, when reports are coming out and being adopted, people don't know each other well enough to trust the work that's been done. But when one hears a report from one that I know him, I heard her faith story, I heard his faith story, I know where he's coming from. And I've found that certainly is another reason why it's so important. When it is assumed that all of us are on a journey of faith, that all of us have room to grow, we can encourage our brothers and sisters along the way to take that first step of faith. Fourth, a basic. We strengthen our congregations when we teach people to give. I was called to the Church of the Good Shepherd in Burke in the fall of 1977, and I was invited before actually moving to Fairfax County to come to Virginia to preach the annual stewardship sermon. But the stewardship chairman asked me, please don't mention the word tithe. I thought, this is going to be a challenge. Now, I may not have mentioned the word in that first sermon, but I certainly introduced the concept. I've come to appreciate that there's a direct connection between an expression of gratitude in the giving of our money and our faith formation. We're shortchanging people when we don't teach them to tithe and when we don't challenge them to give. Fifth, we strengthen our congregations when we provide multiple opportunities for service. A few years ago, the Reverend David May wrote a very thoughtful article in his newsletter to the people at Grace Church Kilmarnock, noting the number of retired people at Grace who had already had successful careers. He observed how many people in that congregation were seeking significance during their years of retirement rather than position or power or money. And they were seeking significance in their service in the community and in their service in the church. For them, making money and being promoted had been replaced with making a difference. Now, I think David touched upon a common theme that goes far beyond retired people. I think that the common theme that binds us together is that we want to make a difference. That's why there's such heartfelt gratitude from our young people when they return from a mission trip. How many young people have told us that they didn't know how much they had to give and how good it felt to be able to make a difference and to serve? I've noticed that new Christians, especially those who've been brought to faith for the first time, that new Christians, having made a commitment to Christ, are not willing to take a seat in the pew and simply be an observer. The new Christian wants to be deployed again and again and again. So we strengthen our congregations when we tend to the roots, to the basics, to education, to teaching people to pray, to helping people make a commitment to Christ, to teaching people to give, and to providing multiple opportunities for service. But congregations don't grow at the center. We need to tend to the center. We need to tend to the stakeholders and to those long-term members. We need to provide pastoral care. We need to love those who've been there. But churches grow at the edges. Churches grow when we are intentional about who we're trying to reach, and then when we direct the resources and the enthusiasm and the space of congregations toward those that we're trying to reach. So I'll suggest these tactics, basics for growing a congregation, and they fall under the rubric of tactics, but they assume the basics of education, prayer, evangelism, stewardship, and service. First, one can grow a congregation when one is clear about who the congregation is trying to reach. This is especially true with a large established congregation, for it is possible to plant a congregation within an existing congregation. I'm looking at Jim Daniels. He knows that's true. It's at St. George's. You've started the 9 o'clock service and are attracting an entirely different group of people, and it was very intentional. And we've seen that throughout our diocese, where some of our larger congregations have very intentionally said, we want to reach this population, and then dedicate resources and space and worship time and staff toward that objective. But we need to be very clear about who we're trying to reach. And when we're doing this, there needs to be unity in a congregation about that objective. A member of the clergy cannot simply go out on his or her own trying to reach a certain population without the enthusiasm and the support of the leadership of a congregation, because intentional, we'll call it evangelism, requires space, staffing, financial support, and most importantly, the enthusiastic backing of the leadership. Second, growing a congregation requires intentional inviting. The day that the Diocese of Virginia purchased the Boulevard Baptist Church, and some of you heard about that in 2004, it was April 1st, 2004, when we bought that church, I asked that Reverend Jesus Reyes to organize a service of Holy Communion that evening because I wanted to claim that space as an Episcopal church. I also asked Jesus to invite some of his members at La Iglesia de San Jose to be part of that service of worship. And we had a glorious evening, and we had a meal that I'll never forget the women seeing the kitchen for the first time, and they just went gaga to think that there was a church kitchen where they could actually have parish activities. But following the dinner and following the service, a man in the congregation offered to help me carry my vestments and crozier stand out to my car. And when we got to the stoop at the front of what's now Santa Maria, the man stopped and he looked across the street and said, "I live across the street." And he said, "I learned to speak English in this building." And then he started to tear up. And he said, "But this is the first time I've ever been invited to worship here." Think about that. He would have come before. And that congregation had died. That Boulevard Baptist Church had dwindled down to fewer than 50 members, and they simply could not sustain the congregation. And here was a person who lived across the street. Now, I didn't know until later that that man had been told, "The bishop wants you to come." We cannot forget that the primary reason that people come to a church is that they've been invited to come by a relative or close friend. We know that advertising may reach 2 or 3%, and that 70 or 80 or 90% will come because they've been invited. Third, growing a congregation requires creative, intentional planning. We've learned in church planting to invent reasons for people to come to church. Since we don't have buildings, we need to rent or borrow space. So events are planned and organized to attract newcomers. And a church planter will dream up a program that will scratch an itch and will encourage people to come. We call these programs taste and see offerings. Or others will call them mezzanine events, where one can stand on the mezzanine and sort of glance at the church as it's in action, where a person can come to a safe event, like a class on parenting or a jambalaya fest, and experience the congregation without being asked to fill out a pledge card. Fourth, growing a congregation requires setting additional places at the table. Now, I know I'm speaking in a metaphor, but I'm very, very serious about that. I would suggest that every congregation needs at least one activity or program that is intentionally offered for those outside the church family or fellowship. One congregation in our diocese has invented a program on Friday evenings for families who are embarrassed to take their children to restaurants. Designed for 3 and 4-year-olds, intergenerational activities. And it's one of the most popular things in that congregation, and they invite people in the neighborhood to come. And people will bring their neighbors and say, "This is a place where we can go, and for $10 we can have hot dogs or spaghetti," and the congregation supports it, and there'll be an activity, and everybody's on their way home by 10 to 8. One African-American congregation, St. Peter's in Richmond, had a hip-hop mass. Lynn Washington was astounded at how it resonated with the neighborhood near St. Peter's. Another congregation in our diocese honors people in the community who serve the community for the common good. One Sunday when I was visiting Trinity Highland Springs, they were honoring the local firemen. And the firemen were there on Sunday in uniform. And one of the firemen carried the American flag in procession. And there were special prayers offered for those who protect Highland Springs. We need to think outside the box in inventing ways to invite people to our congregations. We need to set additional places at the table and then invite people to come. Fifth, growing a congregation requires multiple doors of entry. At the heart of growing congregations is providing more and more ways to come in. Offering a service of worship may be an effective way in attracting seasoned Episcopalians, but it takes other means and methods to attract an individual not familiar with the liturgy or not part of the faith community. The best doors of entry are informal, personal, and attentive. Doors of entry can be neighborhood Bible studies, programs on contemporary issues and concerns, receptions after funerals. And one door of entry can be baptisms. I know that when I was rector of the Church of the Good Shepherd, we never turned down an application for a wedding. Now, we did say, and there was a script that was followed. My assistant said, well, we'd love to take your wedding. Why don't you come on Sunday and talk to Father Jones after the service at coffee hour? And he likes to talk to people who are interested in getting married at coffee hour. And he'll talk to you a few weeks and then he'll sit down with you. And people would say, well, we don't want to attend church. We just want to get married. And the script that Barbara had was, well, Father Jones is rather peculiar about that. He really thinks that people need to be worshiping together if they're preparing for holy matrimony. And they'd say, but we just want to get married. Can we schedule a wedding? And she said, well, come on Sunday and meet Father Jones, and he'll be glad to talk to you at coffee hour about a wedding. And then she'd say it again, but he's very peculiar and particular about this. And I actually wrote the script myself. But we had people who took that seriously and who came. But we didn't turn people down. We didn't send people away. But we did indeed encourage people to be part of a worshiping community. Sixth, growing congregations require open windows. We have a marvelous opportunity with our websites now to open the windows of our church. A number of you very effectively are posting your sermons, audio sermons, on the internet or allowing people to read your sermons. And many of you have told me, this is new since I started working for the diocese, but many of you have told me that people have come because they've heard your sermons on the internet. But we need to open windows where people can approach us and come in. On Saturdays, I often visit the website of the congregations I'm going to visit on Sunday. And it really matters. I've gotten my signal. We have 5 minutes. Growing congregations, seventh, help people make friends. As I visit small congregations in the diocese, I hear often the same Sunday I hear two distinct messages. From those on the inside, people tell me how friendly the congregation is, how much people care for one another. But often, on the same Sunday, I will hear a contradictory message where people will tell me they can't break in and are looking for another church. Now, I would suggest that friendships are rarely formed at coffee hour. I think that's the wrong place to be focusing on the development of friendships. But rather, they are formed outside coffee hour through working and studying and praying together. Coffee hour is a good place for one to meet one's friends. And it is helpful to do those exercises of screening where congregations learn not to screen newcomers out. A number of us have been through those training events where we learn where four shoulders can keep a fifth person out, where three shoulders can keep a person out, where just one can bid one to join the conversation. But that's not the place to be making friends. What is needed is opportunities for new members to engage each other in mission. a new small group, a new Bible study, a new mission team, or a new bridge group can provide opportunities for friendship building. Research has clearly shown that a person who can identify at least six friends in a congregation will be highly unlikely to leave in a time of conflict. But the person who has not made more than two friends is likely to leave when the first bump happens on the horizon. Resistance to new groups is always present in the smallest congregation and in the largest congregation. Old timers will say, "We're one big happy family." A new group will be divisive. But I submit to you that the opposite is true. What ultimately is divisive is a closed system. Even if it appears to be very happy, it is not happy at all for the person on the outside. We know that close friendships require time every day. It means sharing one's feelings and dreams and hopes and sorrows. It means listening and listening, taking time to truly be a friend. And eighth and finally, growing congregations have accessible worship. If we want newcomers to be part of our worship, some concessions need to be made by those on the inside. Worship needs to be planned with the visitor in mind. If there's any hope of that person returning, directions sometimes are really needed. And they may be annoying to the liturgical purist, but we cannot assume that the person who's just dropped in knows what we mean when we say the service is he too. Or even what we mean by BCP. You get it, I hope. In summary, to grow congregations, we need to develop the eyes of a fisherman. When Jesus called his disciples, he said that he would teach them to fish for people. To fish for people, we need to be near the water, and we will need fishing equipment. We will need bait, and we will need to remember to bait the hook. We won't catch fish if the worms stay in the can. We will need to fish in the right waters, and we will need to be patient, and God will give the increase. Thank you.